Wafting across the pastoral lakeside vistas of the New Basement Studios, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
This is part two of our Christmas special. I don't know, whenever you're listening to this, you're listening to it.
Yeah, you keep calling it Christmas special.
Holiday special.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's all, it's just episodes that we're releasing in the holidays.
Yeah, but if you call
it's got some holiday tone to it, but it's not like...
I understand it, but if you call something a special, it makes it special. It's like holiday TV.
It's like Cyber Monday. You just declare it to be the case, and therefore is it.
It's like holiday TV. They go, oh, yeah, it's the Christmas special. Invariably, it's an episode of the series that you watch, but it kind of sucks. But that's what we're doing. This is our Christmas special.
Didn't you just say our show sucks?
No, what I'm saying is it's like a regular episode of our show.
Okay.
But it's about Christmas.
All right.
So we're not going to go down the route of doing hokey Christmas,
but it's not entertainment. Really, it's not really about Christmas too much. I mean, it's about shopping. It's about, which is about movies.
Which is a Christmas thing.
Well, all right. Not for you.
Not for me. No, we established that in the last episode, that I would be going gift-givingless.
So we were talking last time about the brick-and-mortar stores and, you know, what value they had and what depreciating value. Obviously, the counterpoint to that is internet shopping. And far easier for you to do all that shopping. All of the shopping I've done this year, basically internet. I think I maybe stopped into one or two stores, but otherwise it's just sitting there on a laptop watching TV shows looking for things. And you mentioned Amazon.
Yeah, I think I'd said in the last episode how online you could basically go to one or two. There are a couple of websites where you could go to and you could buy everything. You could buy anything you wanted. And, you know, it's weird, though. I want to say this about myself. When I do shop, obviously not for gifts, when I do shop, while I've bought things from those places, for some reason, I actually like to go to, you know, I'll go to a particular company store. Or I'll go to a shoe website, or I'll go to, I like to go to the specialist site rather than just going to eBay. And because I don't know, in the back of my mind, I always feel with eBay and to a lesser extent Amazon that I'm kind of, because I can't see where it's coming from, I feel at some level I might be getting something off the back of a lorry.
You know, it's actually the case of certain types of products.
No this, no that. Whereas if I buy something, if I go to the Sony website, I don't think Sony sell, but let's say I go to the Sony website and buy a piece of Sony electronics. If the thing's not working, I kind of feel like I can package it up, send it back to there, and it's going to be the same customer service as going into the store. With Amazon and eBay, I feel a bit like it's someone like me getting rid of something I had lying around the house.
Yeah, eBay, you're kind of out of luck because you're ultimately dealing directly with the seller, and these sellers could be anybody. And what I was about to say is that, in fact, you know what you're talking about there is actually an issue when it comes to things, for example, telephone batteries. You know, like you need a new telephone battery for your cell phone.
Yeah.
Tons of them that are being sold are not really that. They're going to say Samsung on them, but they're coming from some factory in China. Slapped a thing on there. And as long as it's sold through eBay, you can't pursue anybody. You know, what are you going to do? And it might be fine. The battery might work great, might work as well. You know, that's how come it's so cheap, is because it comes from someplace in China with a fake thing. Doesn't mean it doesn't work as a product, but some of them may not work, and then you don't have any recourse and that sort of thing. But some of the online retailers, the big online retailers, and I'm going to talk about Wayfair in a little bit here.
I've never heard of them.
Yeah, it's a newer thing. It's really most housewares type of thing.
That's
pretty interesting. We'll talk about it in a second. But they realize these issues, and so they've got fantastically generous return things. I don't think Amazon is quite there because Amazon's such a presence. But here's like some of the places you can buy a Shoe Buy and Zappos are both two shoe related stores, and they sell a lot of other things now too. But it's free shipping both directions. Like, because they know when you try shoes on, it might not fit, and the last thing you want to do is buy shoes and know you're going to have to go to the store and spend $8 to send them back. And so they tell you right up front, we give you a label. If it doesn't fit you, just throw this label back on the box, bring it to the shipping store, you're done.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's an incentive to
go just put it in your mailbox. You don't have to take it to the shipping store. Yeah.
So that's a big incentive to do that sort of stuff. And like Wayfair is a place that it just popped up the last year. Maybe it's because, you know, we moved recently and we're shopping for a lot of stuff.
Okay.
Has such an endless supply of housewares, and they're coming clearly from different sellers. Like I recently bought a couple of ceiling fans from them. They're coming in three separate shipments, ceiling fans and a light. Because even though Wayfair is the one who's doing it, they're really facilitating delivery from somebody else.
Wayfair are a middleman.
Yeah.
But I think Amazon.com's like that a little bit too.
Parts of it, yeah.
Amazon are this funny blend of, You know, I saw something on the web or on TV about the big Amazon warehouses. But then I've also bought things on Amazon.com where it says this will be shipped to you from Johnson's box in, you know, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And so they seem to be a blend of sort of middleman, their own thing. But I am of the understanding that if you order it through the Amazon website, even if it's coming from Eric's basement backyard bazaar, the Amazon standards of refunds.
Yeah. That's what they're standing behind this stuff. That all upholds.
Yeah.
So it's sort of interesting because they have these competitors. But the thing I was going to mention about all this sort of stuff is I'm not sure you need them anymore. Like you mentioned the small stores. The greatest weapon that I think there is around for this sort of stuff is just internet searching. You know, if you find a product that you like, okay. I recommend to everybody that they copy the name of it. You know, from wherever they're looking at it at that moment, before you pull the trigger on buying it, copy the name of it. It's the so-and-so, you know,
okay.
backyard grill, you know, and it's going to have a model number, all that sort of stuff. Just throw that into the search engine, search it on Google, and you're very likely to find it. First of all, Google has its own shopping stuff where it'll pull up a bunch of prices from different places. They're getting money off of ads. They're not getting a piece of the sale price.
Okay.
And almost invariably, you'll find better pricing. And it might be from a crazy small place that you've never heard of before, but why not buy it from them anyway? You're buying it over the internet anyhow, as long as you do certain other things to protect yourself.
Okay, here's my internet hang-up then. Oh, I've got a hang-up about this. If I go into a shop and I see the Billy Bob's backyard barbecue grill right mm-hmm. there, I can look at it and I'm like, yeah, and then that's what I buy. And if I got a problem, I take it back there. I've done what you've said, which is punch in a product and get all the different prices. And I know this is maybe a reflection on my own psychological makeup. I'll look at all the prices. I won't buy from the most expensive place. I won't buy from the cheapest place. I'll buy from somewhere in the middle. And invariably, somewhere in the middle is either someone I've bought from before or someone that seems somehow legitimate. I always worry if Billy Bob's Backyard Grill, if one fella's selling it over here for $100 and another fella's selling it over there for $70, my mind goes, there's got to be something up with that $70 one.
It might be. Yeah, I mean,
and so I'm not going to buy the $70 one because right now I'm thinking I'm saving $30, but somehow I know I'm taking receipt of a whole load of issues.
Well, you have to do your own personal balancing of that. You know, like how much is exactly. the premium
so
you're paying
worth? Halfway between $70 and $100, I'll buy from the one in the middle. See, people think I'm a wacko, but in fact, it all makes sense.
It makes sense for you.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, like, listen, if the place is, you know, the website is only in a foreign language or something like that, it probably doesn't make sense to buy it from there.
Okay.
But, you know, there's certainly other types of things you can do. And you can also, you know, you get a lot of protections off of credit cards and things like that so that you could do it other times. But for example, you can get these credit card things. My bank offers it, and I don't know. I'm not sure what you're doing over there.
I'm playing on the computer and everything.
Yeah.
But don't worry about it. Just keep telling.
Okay,
keep
I can't tell because I can't tell if we're still actually recording.
No, we are recording. Don't worry about that.
It looks funny. The little thing. It does look different than it normally looks.
It does look different.
That's why you're checking it out.
That's why I'm checking. But I can do these. I can multitask.
Okay. Well, I'll give advice to the whole world because I'm sure Zeph won't be listening to this sort of stuff. You can get basically temporary credit card numbers. So like my bank, for example, has a thing with its credit card accounts where you basically can set up a temporary number that only lasts for 2 months and has a certain limit on it. And I'll use that on these sort of less well-known websites. Holding. Continue. Anyway, I'm not sure where to start again, but you use these credit card temporary credit card numbers where you basically have a limited limit, so that if for some reason you go to some website that you don't know that well and you're worried about them having your information, you can just give them one of these temporary credit card numbers that's only covers like $200. So even if it was to get lost or somebody's do something,
but you can use PayPal.
You can
PayPal
do that too.
Is the same the thing. Version. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If they take PayPal,
yeah.
But if they just take credit cards, you can do it off of these temporary credit card numbers.
I don't know. I've not run into anyone. I only just recently opened a PayPal account. One, because I'd never bought stuff from eBay. One, because I was a bit iffy about buying from.
But didn't you sell things on eBay?
Well, yeah, and that's when I opened my PayPal account.
Well, that's not recent.
No, I did have that one time on eBay where I sold something And then I got into trouble because I had people, friends of mine, go on and attempt to artificially inflate the price. Although right. eBay never proved that, and I was suspended for a short while. And again, eBay never proved that. So as far as I'm concerned, I wasn't guilty of it. And why on earth would I get people? Because then if I have my friends artificially inflating the price, what happens if I end up having to sell to one of them? So again, I'm just throwing it out there. But since then, I'm back in eBay.
But you had a PayPal account at that time. You must have.
Yeah, but I've reopened like a legit one now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the other one wasn't legitimate?
No, I actually don't think I opened a PayPal account then. Because this was like 4 or 5 years ago. And then I just stayed off eBay as well because I was worried that I was being like, you know, I was being victimized, oppressed, targeted.
Yeah, PayPal's the other option. Although, you know, somebody had the PayPal information, they could, whatever your PayPal drawing account is or wherever you get the money, it's got the same issue.
Suppose, yeah.
It's supposed to be better because it doesn't ultimately expose that information to the retailer. But anyway, that's a whole other piece of it. But even, I recommend that people run a search. For example, we were just shopping recently for a couple of area rugs, nothing too fancy. And we were just all set to do it. And I said, well, let me just run a search. Literally found them for half price at Home Depot.
See, it's interesting, though. My hang-up all depends. If I'm buying rugs, I'm like, whatever, just send me the cheapest one. Because it's a rug, what do I care? But if it's like, ooh, something I really want, and I've not ever been in a place in my life where I really want a rug. If it's something I really want, then my price somewhere in the middle guarantee kicks back in. But if it's something like a rug, I'm like, whatever, I just want the cheapest one.
Well, even so, you need to know the middle of what?
Like in the middle of the price range.
Right, but how do you know that without doing the research? It's fine.
Well, no, I do
it's
do
fine
the
at the end of it, you choose it. But what I'm saying is everybody should run a search for whatever product you're buying. I mean, unless it's a $5 item and it's not even worth the time. But whatever you're buying, run a search, check it out kind of thing. I heard another internet tip lately, and I have not tried it out to know if it's true or not. I know part of it is true, but I'm not sure it's entirely true. If you basically go through all the processes to buy a product.
Okay.
And
the last minute
information, you say, nah, never mind. And it just stays in your cart. And you have an account with these people and they know your email address. I invariably end up getting emails from that company saying, hey, you know, you didn't finish up your shopping with this stuff. Why don't you buy
this stuff?
No, I've got those. Now, I heard from somebody.
But they don't bill you.
No.
You still have to hit accept.
Yeah. So somebody saying that at a certain point, the number of retailers were offering you discounts on that. They'll basically say, one of those follow up emails, if you wait long enough, will be, hey, that's in your cart. We'll give you 10% off to buy it.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
And you're playing chicken there at that point. I have not had that experience yet. I do want to find some product just to test this out on and see if it actually works. But that would be pretty interesting.
I have been in that situation where I've got the follow-up email. I don't remember getting the we'll give it to you for cheaper.
Exactly. But like I've gotten all the follow-up emails. But
as soon as I get the follow-up email, because I panic that they're going to rip me off, I then go back in and make sure my cart is clear.
That you're never going to be able to find out the end game on that.
What you're saying is I should not panic. Yeah. I should leave it in there and hope that they're like, we need to get... It's like going to a car dealership.
Yeah.
What can we do to sell it to you today?
See, for
oh, because I'm a minge bag. We established that in the last episode.
Well, but also, except that you pay a premium for having nice websites, but... You know, you don't like the cheap website, so you're going to pay $30 more.
Because I think they're a bit dicey and...
Seb, I assume I'm not the first person to point out that you have some idiosyncrasies and inconsistencies in your perspective on things. You said very cheap, but you're willing to pay extra because you don't like certain websites.
If you look up close, they would appear to be inconsistencies and idiosyncrasies. If you take a macro worldview, it all makes it all fits in. It makes perfect sense.
It's a very complex machine you are.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
The thing is, if you're playing chicken up to Christmas, you know, for a holiday, at some point you have to buy the gift, and they know you're going to have to buy the gift if you want to get it delivered in time. So you are playing chicken. But
that's
in your
right.
case, since you're not actually
I'm
buying
not
it for
Christmas,
anybody except for yourself.
I can wait until...
This is actually perfect because they will think you need to do it by Christmas. They'll think they need to sell to you by Christmas. You should put a couple of things in some cart somewhere and see if it works.
Let me give you an issue, though, now, to now go back to my own idiosyncrasies. If I'm buying something on the internet, it's because I want it. And what I mean by that is I understand that, well, then you should go to the store and do it. Because I don't want to go to the store. If I search for something on the internet, I'm probably going to buy it because I can just click and go, yeah. I don't want to get into some long thing where I'm playing some sort of, you know, face off with the retailer in a desperate attempt to get the price down. I'm like, I don't want to wait 4 months.
No, but I mean,
I want it now.
The point is that this is an experiment.
That's why I've gone on the internet and hit click.
This is Atlantic Voice research. This doesn't have to be a product you need or you want
to
have.
All right, give me $30 to buy something and then I'll
go. No, you don't have to buy it. All you have to do is find out whether they offer you a discount. You don't even have to finish the purchase. I just say go through the steps of something you might like.
Okay.
And then see if they offer you discounts. I'll do the same thing. I'll just do it for things I'm not buying for other people.
Then I'll tell you what, we're going to do a competition. We're going to see. We're going to pick something that's the same price and see which one of us ends up being offered the best deal. Because who knows? We may go to either two different sites or the same site, and at some arbitrary reason, you end up getting 14% off, and they only offer me 12% off.
Okay.
I think that is a possible
note of that because
competition. Atlantic Voice competition. Atlantic Voice challenge.
So
Atlantic Voice consumer challenge.
So, you know, there's those websites.
Who needs Angie's List when you've got us?
One thing we have to talk about Amazon ties into an episode we did, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago or something. Yeah. Drones.
That's right. We also talked about it in our special, our best of. Our annual best of.
So we really only talked about it once. It also appears in our like we didn't talk about it a second. We didn't re-record all those bits.
No, we didn't. No, but what I'm saying, in the interest of self-promotion, go back and listen to any of those shows to hear this bit.
Yeah, in reality, the greatest hits was basically Zeph's greatest hits and how much crap he could give.
Well, I done all the work.
Exactly. So we talked about drones and
I've actually been thinking about this year's greatest hits.
Why we talked about drones.
Because
there was that whole story of the pilot up in
because we
New
were
York.
Doing the robots. We'd done the episode because you'd found the thing about the robot dog and the robot donkey. Things.
Yeah.
But I think we'd started the episode with the drones.
Okay.
And you'd made some very racially prejudicial comments about Italian pilots comments about drones.
Racially insensitive comments.
You did. You were making comments like Italian pilots would only be talking about spaghetti and pizza and stuff like that.
No, I didn't say anything like that.
All right, anyway.
So Amazon...
Maybe you need to listen to
those
old
episodes. Amazon came out and said they're looking at the possibility of delivery by drone.
Okay.
Like, so they can cut out, you know, trucks and UPS and all that sort of stuff, and they would deliver via a drone to your house, like short distances.
Okay.
And so you could order something and have it in 30 minutes because this drone would come and drop it off. And if you search on the internet, you'll find a video of this actually occurring. And it's the drone, we were just talking about barbecues, looks a little bit like
a little
barbecue grill.
Oh,
that's basically the size of a barbecue grill, this thing. It's got like four legs and it's got four little helicopter blades around the side.
Yeah.
It's got a box underneath, and it basically would land in front of your house and drop the box with whatever the product was you bought.
Do you have to go out and greet it? Like, do you have to sign for anything?
No, you know, the video, the people do come out as the thing is landing.
Oh, really?
You know, but it, like, then takes off immediately. They don't do anything. It just lands in your front yard. Now, Jeff Bezos talked about it. I mean, and he said, obviously, this is
hugely. He's the guy in charge of Amazon, right?
Yeah. Okay. Also owns the Washington Post.
Oh, that's right. He recently bought that, yeah.
And so he said, obviously, this is not like, oh, we're going to roll it out next year. It's just a notion of sort of a futurist kind of thing. And you could see a grain of possibility in that, you know, I'm talking 20 years in the future, we have these deliveries. Yeah. But of course, immediately everybody's like, oh my goodness, we can't possibly do this. You know, there's a no-fly zone around Washington, D.C. You can't possibly have these drones flying around. People could bring bombs in through these things and do all these sort of crazy things.
Yeah, but they do that now. Just deliver
it
another
know.
Way.
Like, no, but the point is, like right now, if you saw this thing
like
flying
the government
around,
could bomb me. I don't think terrorists are going to get a drone and attempt to bomb me. They're just going to stick the drone in a truck.
You could build that, right?
What, a drone?
Yeah. That's not hard.
I could build. Okay, hold on.
I don't mean you. I mean a terrorist could build it. I don't mean you, actually you. I know you can't build
it. I don't think a terrorist could build it.
Of course you could. It's nothing. It's a remote control, you know, toy.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'm sort of there, I guess.
I mean, understand, this is a tiny little thing. This is like the size of a tabletop at most.
Drone.
Yeah, and it's just, you just...
Because it looks bigger.
It does look bigger. It was misleading. If you watch the video,
so what's it delivering, like a teacup?
No, it's like books. You know, videos, whatever it is. Of course, you don't need any of those things by a drone anymore, but in any event. So you could do that. The issue, the...
I would order something just to see
you
the
sidetracked
drone
me from my terrorist issue, so, which is, right now, if you saw this thing flying around right now, like if this was outside, you'd be worried, right? You'd be like, oh my God, what the heck is that?
I'd be going upstairs with my shotgun.
Exactly.
I'd be putting both barrels into the drone, one just to see if I could.
The fear is, if in fact we were getting deliveries through these systems so they became commonplace, now you really wouldn't know which one was dropping a bomb, you know, somewhere, and which one was delivering books.
Okay.
So that's why people say it's more of of a threat if that became a pervasive thing. It's not really a, it is a threat, theoretical threat now, but we're prepared to react to it.
Okay.
Whereas if there's freaking drones all over the place, and it,
all right,
you know, let you know, me be worried about.
Okay. I'm now gonna deep. Now people think I'm crazy with some of my theories, but I'm gonna say this right now. People are worried that the Amazon delivery drones could ultimately be up to something for the government and dropping bombs. Right? Is that the theory you've just given me?
Oop, oh. Sorry, I didn't mean that to come is out. That the I was theory, going to show you the video. But...
Is that the theory you've just given me?
I wasn't paying attention. What'd you say?
That the Amazon delivery drone, people are suspect about them because it actually could be a drone working for the government.
No.
And delivering a bomb.
No, I think they're worried about terrorists who would.
So we're worried that a terrorist might replicate a drone and then attack me. That's the concern.
Well, not maybe not you personally again.
Well, no, but let's make it personal in order to bring the danger home. What I'm saying is, look at the site. Now, you're now playing the video of the drone. Well, the fella is basically delivering something the size of a paperback book. I don't. Oh, it looks like on Thunderbirds when it picks what pod it's taking.
Mm-hmm.
The marionette show that I used to watch. It seems like cobblers. And I don't want to hear that it doesn't get the drone crashes and then they're like, no, we send it out, blah, blah, blah. Do you know what I mean?
You know, I have that going on right now with FedEx.
Exactly.
They claim to have delivered something. It didn't show up at my front door.
Exactly. So if I'm going to try, if I'm already going to be hostile, I'm actually going to request to Amazon, I don't want it coming by drone.
They come outside for it.
Why? To give the drone, are you leaving cookies for the drone? Because it's working at Christmas? Is that the deal? Oh, look, and then he come out. The fella come out. Yeah, okay, I get it. I don't know. I'm now completely lost track of my don't worry about the government trying to attack you with drones.
I'm not worried about the government doing it.
You're worried about, okay, don't worry about the terrorists trying to attack you with drones. Terrorists will attack you many other ways as it is.
Right, but the thing is, if there were drones all over the place, like if basically every day you saw drones around, it becomes much more easy. Just like cars. I mean, that's why cars are a terrorism danger, because you don't know which car is a regular car and which one's full of...
I get
fertilizer-based explosives.
I understand that, but I'm not concerned about terrorists attacking me with cars now. The threat of terrorist attack is not greater because of the drone. If Tony the terrorist can already attack me by filling up a car with bombs, thinking I'm going to get that guy's F because he's always trashing us on his show, and fills up a car and then launches a suicide car at my house... That's already an existing threat.
Right.
I'm not going to go, oh, Amazon have got drones. Oh, I could really be in danger by the terrorists hijacking the drones to attack me.
I'm not saying...
I'm already a target of Tony the terrorist.
It's another marginal risk.
I go through life. I can't worry about... I've got enough other things to worry about. Media attacks, aliens returning. I can't be worried about the terrorists taking over the drones.
In any event, my...
Although, you know something? It did look kind of neat. I'd like to have some... You could have food delivered by a drone.
Sure.
Because if it makes it quicker than the time right now, my local Chinese place is only like 6 blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
They always go, 45 minutes. I'm like, seriously?
Well, they do have to cook it.
Yeah, but in a walk, it takes like 10 minutes.
No.
Boom, drone, back of my house, I'm up for that.
Yeah, but now...
Drone.
What if, because the terrorists know that you regularly get Chinese food delivery, you will welcome the drone to your front yard with open arms.
But the terrorists, I'm already nervous about being attacked by terrorists. I'm not going to be extra nervous because of the drones. It's just another thing to me to be vigilant of.
I think you should be extra nervous.
All right.
There could be meteorites in there.
Well.
No, the other pop thing I wanted to talk about was, what do you think, if in fact Amazon started delivering packages through drones, what do you think actually happens to these drones?
What do you mean? Well, they get vandalized, don't they? Yeah. All kinds of people like me are trying to grab them and smash
somebody sees a drone flying down. They go,
people
throwing
rocks at it
and stuff.
Everything. Yeah.
Look, yeah. Nobody. I'm just going to shoot it down.
Exactly.
I'm going to use my shotgun.
And then you call Amazon and go, my copy of Sound of Music DVD didn't come. What's the deal there? And they're like, oh, we sent it out. The drone went out. Well, did the drone report back in?
Exactly.
Does the drone have to check back in? Or is the delivery man has to go back to the depot? He goes back, his supervisor goes, Dave, did you deliver everything? And he goes, no, number 15 wasn't home. I brought his microwave oven back.
Right.
And then it goes out the next day. The drone, he's got no accountability. The drone is like, what do I care?
Theoretically, you would schedule the delivery and all that sort of stuff. But This is why I say there's a lot of interesting things here. I do think...
It seems like a lot of work.
30 years from now, when maybe... You know, they talk about, is this, boy, I'm getting way off of track here, but there's this notion of Internet of Things, which is instead of just talking about computers, it's about everything being networked. So your car is networked, everything is networked, and so the data can be shared.
Oh, so everything's connected to the Internet.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Oh, so I guess, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Commonly what. Called the Internet of Things. We should do a whole episode on Internet of Things. It's kind of an interesting topic. But if basically your drones are connected into the Internet and everything's connected, you'd have a way to like track them. Like, you know, like in terms of the terrorism thing.
It's like tracking your package now, though.
Right.
You can track your package now.
Right. You'd have a governmental signature on the thing. So like, or, you know, like you would know whether the drone coming through is an Amazon drone or a terrorist drone.
All right. I'm for that.
So.
I'm for that.
I think that might be it for our internet shopping. Was there anything else?
No.
So we've kind of covered all the
shopping. We've covered that.
So when you're done shopping... You know,
for myself, yes, not for other people. Let me be clear for anyone out there thinking they might, you know, if I haven't seen you yet and it's past Christmas, then believe you me, there's no gift coming because I don't do that.
The other thing you can do at the holidays when you have a little bit of free time with your family, see movies.
Exactly, yes.
And go to the movies. So, you know, we talked a lot about the summer season of movies, and we'll do that again next summer.
Yeah, that's one of our traditions.
There's a holiday season of movies, and we're not talking about holiday movies, but rather movies that are designed to come in at the tail end of the year.
When it comes to the movie season, winter is the new summer. I actually mean that seriously, and maybe it's an age thing. I feel like there are two movie seasons now. There are... summer movies, and that's for the kids, cartoons, Transformers, that kind of stuff. And then there is, because again, the winter used to be more sort of like, you know, arty acting.
Yeah. But just blockbusters in the summer.
Just as many blockbusters now come out in the winter, but with one or two exceptions, they seem to be slightly more literate. Like blockbuster for the adults.
And they're also trying to get in under the wire on Oscars.
That's true.
And like trying to hit... recent, like but, if you but, at the end of the year, those get more recognition.
But what I'm saying is, there are still big budget, get the crowds in movies that now come out during the winter season. And I say this every couple of episodes, big James Bond fan. James Bond now comes out in the winter. When I was a kid, he came out in the summer. Now, winter. We're going to talk a little bit upcoming about the Hobbit movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, normally, under normal circumstances, that could easily be classified as a summer movie.
Yeah.
Special effects.
I think something about the fact that they wear a lot of jackets and layers and things like
that. Well, I think
like
it's more comfortable. It's more comfortable for the dwarves in the movie if it's in the winter.
Yeah.
Obviously, but Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Now, that's the
first one. Hunger Games came out kind of early. It came out, I think, before Thanksgiving was even here, wasn't it?
Yes. I mean, and Harry Potter. Harry Potter is something else. Yeah, I mean, I do feel a little bit like there are now two seasons. I mean, yeah, two seasons. So what I'm saying is I think it's like a summer movie season, but slightly more adult.
Yeah.
That was my general point.
Yeah. So you mentioned Hunger Games, and Hunger Games, like I was saying, came out a little early. We're not really going to talk in depth about it. Did you see the first one?
I don't know.
I saw it. Very unimpressed.
I mean, I don't do any of these teen fiction as films. I didn't see Harry Potter.
Yeah, I've never seen any Harry Potter.
The one with the vampires, whatever that one is. What's that one?
Oh, Twilight.
Twilight. That was three or four films. I've not seen any of them.
I've seen them on TV anyway.
But say that again for all our listeners.
I've seen Twilight.
And you've seen it. Oh, there you go. Okay. I think I've got something out of you. That's a confession.
To what?
I don't know. I'll let the listeners draw their own conclusions.
I've only seen them on like cable, though. I didn't go to the theater.
It doesn't make it any better.
It sure does.
And I've not
privacy seen, my own home.
And I've not seen Hunger Games. I don't. And that Ender's Game movie that came out was based on like a teen book. I don't do any of that sort of teen fiction as movies.
Yeah, I haven't seen Ender's Game.
Just because I'm not familiar with the subject matter, and I'm just not interested.
Yeah, but what I couldn't stand about the Hunger Games is that it was. It's so badly invented. Like, it's a sci-fi thing, but the things it does are so ridiculously implausible. They're like magic. You know, like, you know, why do you have, like, they had a whole bit there. I'm spoiler for anybody who didn't see the first Hunger Games, but she's running through the woods, and they basically create these dog animals that chase her, but they conjure them out of nothing. It's not like they get released from a trapdoor and they chase her. It's literally like, they crystallize out of computer hologram type stuff, and they're chasing her. I'm like,
Really?
They were just created by a computer. Yeah, you can't make a thing that's going to chase her around when it's not real.
Isn't there a play on that on the old classic short story, The Most Dangerous Game, which is people hunting people?
Yeah, but it's kids hunting kids, which is
the same thing. They're still people, isn't it?
Makes a weird thing.
They're smaller people.
Kids killing kids is a juvenile theme, apparently.
I mean, but those movies,
which is Ender's Game for that matter, it's juveniles waging war
against other juveniles.
I think it's like an outer space alien species that we don't really understand. Okay. I don't think any juveniles. It could be juveniles, but
yeah. All right, so Hunger Games. So
so we're not going to talk about that because it's basically been out and all this sort of stuff. You know, we've got some.
But it was a blockbuster. It was a blockbuster to kick off the winter season.
Right. Right.
Okay, so trailers. What do we got coming up?
It's made so much money already, too. It's ridiculous, like 200-something million something already.
Well, that's the... I mean, and again, I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but that is the thing about this winter holiday season is if you're a studio, you're still making your cash. Whereas I think 20 years ago, or if we need to make cash, it needs to be in the summer, you can still release a movie. People go to cinema any which time now. So... What's our next film?
So the first film we're going to talk about is, we're running trailers here, and as people know, we're very happy to talk about movies that we don't know anything about. We've, of course, not seen any of these movies. We've just seen trailers and read little things.
But we know about them. I think you make out that we don't know anything.
Well, we do a little Wikipedia research, sure.
Oh, you can say that. I don't. I watch trailers, all kinds of stuff. So the first film we've got coming...
Yeah, I
got
to run through
is American Hustle, Christian Bale, Amy Adams.
Yeah, Amy Adams, by the way, continues to be in every single movie around. No Bradley Cooper. For me.
Now you keep changing the rules. You know, you're getting a little power drunk. Richard, you want to tell him, Edith? You want to wake him up?
Oh, no, I said we shouldn't do any of it, Irvin. You know I said that. So now I support Richie. He's got vision. Do it heavy or don't do it.
I want to point out, she's supposed to have a Long Island accent, I think, and it just suddenly became English partway through that process.
Well, no, she's supposed to, but she's a hustler pretending to be British.
Shit all over politicians again?
Really?
Yeah. Just because you want to be a big shot, get a promotion.
No, I'm thinking big. All right, this is going to be fantastic. We're doing video surveillance. I'm doing this from the feet up.
You will never do it properly because you got too much government attitude to be small and sleek. I'm like the Viet Cong, man, all right? I'm in and I'm out. I was there the whole time. You don't know it, all right? That's an odd of becoming somebody.
So Christian Pins, Bradley Cooper, and Lawrence, the Hunger Games girl, whatever. What the heck's her first name?
Jennifer Lawrence.
She's in it too. This movie's directed by the same guy,
David O. Russell. Yeah.
Silver Linings Playbook, which of course was Bradley Cooper. And I think it's interesting how people go back to the same actors over and over again for stuff.
Yeah, because we're going to talk about a movie later where I was going to make that point, The Wolf of Wall Street and Martin Scorsese. But yeah. You're right, yeah.
He did Three Kings, of course, a favorite of yours. That
big
we
favorite
about
of mine, yes.
Of our recent...
And he did an old movie with Ben Stiller, and I've now forgotten what it was called. And it's about Ben, it's like a black comedy. Ben Stiller's a guy looking for his real life parents. It was like his first, one of his first movies he made. It was before Three Kings. Ben Stiller's in it, and Patricia Arquette. I think I've got the right Arquette. Yeah, the younger Arquette sister, and Tia Leone, and Elliot Gould, and all kinds of people. It was quite fun. I think it's quite funny. I've forgotten what it's called now.
So this movie has a lot of buzz right now. It's based on a factual thing.
Yes,
Abscam, which was a FBI effort going after corruption. Got a number of politicians, congressmen, I think some state congressmen and stuff convicted of bribery and things like that. They came after Bob Guccione at one time and he turned them down. Like they were trying to get him to get money to bribe some other people and they were going to implicate him and stuff. And he was like, you're crazy. I'm not getting involved in this.
Why would the guy from Penthouse be attempting to get involved?
They were trying to get him to put up money to do this stuff. And it involved like fake sheiks, like...
Middle Eastern sheiks.
And the funny thing is, I actually remember some of this stuff because it was all based out of Long Island where I grew up. And I remember sort of seeing this stuff in the news about these black and white tapes with these fake sheiks. And I had no idea what it was at the time. The movie is not a literal telling of any particular story.
It's inspired by true events, I think, is now the technical term.
Some of the characters are the same, but they've definitely taken it. Like, they're not pretending like this is a historical thing. They're probably it's probably not much different than some of these other movies that have done it, but they're tired of the first wave of reviews talking about how they're historically inaccurate. So they're basically saying, listen, we're historically inaccurate. Just come see the movie.
It is a new sort of cop-out now where you could almost take... It's like sort of taking real people and then just making them do whatever they want. And then if you put that disclaimer on the front, A, you don't have to stay true to history, and two, you actually don't have to waste time creating original characters. You just take real. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's a bit lazy.
You do it where people, you know, you can have your cake and eat it too. Kind of thing.
That's.
But it's supposed to be very good, and it looks great. You know, that clip didn't have much music, but as these movies always do, it had a great selection of classic rock tunes from the time.
And I will say something about David O. Russell Films, and again, we talked about him when we did our George Clooney special from a couple of weeks ago. His films all have very good soundtracks. I think him and again, I sort of name dropped Scorsese earlier. He's another one who really understands the power of putting music into these things and picking the right tunes rather than just picking any old tunes. So the buzz on American Hustle is very good. It's probably worth giving it a go. Here's our next one. Yep. We're about to watch Leo DiCaprio in The Wolf of Wall Street, directed by the aforementioned Martin Scorsese.
Is that your car on the lot?
Yeah.
It's a Jag?
Yeah.
How much money you make?
I don't know. $72,000.
It's another Long Island one, too.
Yeah.
You show me a pay stub for $72,000 on it, I quit my job right now and I work for you.
This is Jonah Hill talking here with a funny accent and funny teeth.
Yeah, I'm going into stocks.
My name is Jordan Belfort. At the tender age of 22, I headed to the only place that befit my high-minded ambitions.
Name of the game? Move the money from your clients.
A lot of stars in this. We got Matthew McConaughey, who I think just plays in the early part.
At the same time, it's advantageous to everyone, correct?
No.
I started my own firm out of an abandoned auto body shop.
We will be targeting the wealthiest 1% of Americans.
I love three things. I love my country, I love Jesus Christ, and I love making people rich.
Hello? But I needed to mold them in my own image. With this script, I'm going to teach each and every one of you to be the best.
This is the greatest company in the world!
I was becoming a legend.
Aren't you married?
Yeah, but married people can't have friends.
We're not gonna be friends.
I was making so much money, I didn't know what to do with it.
$26,000 for one dinner!
Dad, we're not poor anymore.
Tell them about the sides.
What are these sides? They cure cancer?
The sides.
All right, so there you go.
This is actually another one that is a true story. This is probably close to being a true story because it's based on the memoir of the main character, who was, whose name escapes me at the moment, but he was a Long Island guy who set up this classic boiler room stock operation called Stratton Oakmont, where basically you'd pump up stocks, dump them, run Ponzi schemes, all this sort of stuff.
Soak
all your clients for things.
Bernie Madoff.
And you can, when you go online and you search for like clips on this, you can actually find a clip from one of their actual pool parties, like the actual guy, like, you know,
somebody
was videotaping and all sort of stuff at the time because they were a big deal in the, I guess it was mid-80s, basically.
Big,
very cheesy.
Big stellar cast, directed by Martin Scorsese. I have two comments to make about it. One, Matthew McConaughey seems to have lost a lot of weight.
Well, he's probably just gaining his weight back from Dallas Buyers Club.
I don't know, he still looks very thin, and I'm worried about him. And two, it's a Martin Scorsese film. It's 3 hours long. Now,
yeah, it is 3 hours.
Might
as well tell everybody again your problem with
it's
the 3 hours.
It's an old hang up. When movies are that long, some moment I need to get up and go to the toilet, and half, I don't want to go in knowing I'm going to miss part of it. But I do, in all seriousness, now want to say this about Martin Scorsese movies. And did we mention Leonardo DiCaprio?
Yeah.
It's like the fourth cap, but, you know, we'll come back to that in a minute. Scorsese makes long movies, Goodfellas, Casino, The Departed, which is actually longer than the original Hong Kong action movie it's based on, Infernal Affairs, which I think I said back then, if you can get a chance to watch the original, watch the original. What was the other one I was just thinking? The Aviator with DiCaprio.
Yeah.
I will say this about all Scorsese's long movies. He directs and edits them so well, they never feel that long. They never drag. I've sat through 2-hour movies where just the way they've been put together, the way the story's been told, they drag. Scorsese's a master. He can, he'll take 3 hours to tell a story. It won't feel like 3 hours. And so while I'm a bit nervous at the thought of going to a film for 3 hours, I'm hoping my Martin Scorsese effect will cut in and hopefully, you know, psychologically give me control over my bladder. You know, I think this is what, DiCaprio's fourth? Was Shutter Island a Scorsese film where DiCaprio and Mark Ruffalo are detectives and Ben Kingsley? This is like his fourth or fifth film with Scorsese. You know, we talked about David O. Russell going back to the well with the same people. I think film directors are like anyone else in business or whatever your trade is. You want to work with people who you know get the job done as you want them. So I have no problem. All these directors are now collecting sort of unofficial repertory companies of their own. Christopher Nolan is the same way. I think I was telling you earlier, there was one night a couple of weeks ago, Inception came on TV and I was watching Inception and I'm realizing, yeah, four of those people have been in Batman and such in this. I just think it's human nature.
Yeah.
All of us work with people we want to work with. So I'm looking forward to that film. It's got a stellar cast.
Yeah.
And again, 179 minutes, but it's Scorsese. So from a bladder perspective, it'll probably only be about 2 hours.
All right, I'm going to throw some cold water on the possibilities for this movie.
Do it.
So The Departed, right? This to me, in tone, at least in the trailers, most resembles The Departed.
See, I didn't. I think it resembled Casino or Goodfellas.
Do you know
talking to the camera, kind of throwaway.
You know, they're billing this as a black comedy, not as a real sort of dramatic story.
No.
And this my problem with Departed, I liked Departed at the time, but then in rewatching it, it doesn't seem to me to hold up because it's too comic book. Like the notion, I appreciate that it's based on some true things and stories.
No, it's based on a Hong Kong action movie.
Oh, isn't it?
Yeah, Infernal Affairs.
Anyway, it's too comic book, the notion of like these stereotyped characters of who they are, particularly like Leo himself plays a regular character, but Nicholson
yeah.
And the police
Baldwin,
Alec Baldwin Sheen, and Mark Wahlberg, they all play these sort of like
Boston
goofy comedy type of bits, and it's not really realistic enough. And so for that reason, when I rewatch it, I'm just like, it's so over the top kind of performance. And I think there's like you look at Jonah Hill's character in this stuff, with he's got these fake teeth in, and he's doing this over the top accent thing. I think it's, I'm not sure. I'm not going to say it'd be bad. I just don't think it's as good as a story like this could actually be. But then again, like I said, they're billing it as a comedy. I think they're preparing you for that possibility here that it's not supposed to be like very realistic. It's supposed to be sort of farcical.
Yeah, I do want to say that. I think you hit on something with The Departed there. And again, I was a bigger fan of the original than I was the remake. Though saying that, when I watched the remake for the first time, I enjoyed it because structurally as a story, any story, doesn't matter if you're telling it with cowboys and Indians or knights in armor, the story twists and turns in such a way that you are compelled to watch it. But there was something about The Departed, you hit on something there that I'd never thought before. Every character, ultimately, apart from DiCaprio's character, seems to be designed like some sort of a stereotype.
Yeah.
And when you watch the film again, it kind of undoes the movie a little bit. Like, you know, I really can't take this
seriously. Yeah, like the first deliver, when Alec Baldwin first delivers his lines, his sort of comedic, it's funny. The second time, it's like
it's like a cheap cop show where it's the boss that yells.
Exactly.
But that being said, I do feel, when I watch the trailer, and I know studios do trailers in such a way to obviously hearken you to something to make you come and see it, I was immediately struck that there was this sort of Goodfellas Casino vibe about it, where there's ultimately some stuff where you go, yeah, that's funny, and the music and this type of thing. And there is this sort of, we're not looking at Scorsese doing Raging Bull, let's put it that way.
Right, yeah. It's definitely, I don't think he pretends it's that, and to some extent.
Again, I'm not going to pan it. I'm not worried about its content, I'm worried about its length. What's the next film?
So we mentioned this already. We probably won't spend too much time on this.
Oh, God, no.
It's The Hobbit.
Where does your journey end? You seek that which would bestow upon you the
or
right
I guess
to
the
rule.
Title is The Hobbit, : The Desolation of Smaug.
Is it Smaug or Smaug?
Because
it's spelled S-M-A-U-G.
Slay a dragon.
I think it's Smaug. So now we see all the little video game things going on with it. People in barrels rolling down rivers.
What video game things? What do you mean video
I'm
effects?
Just saying the whole thing is set up to be like a video game.
When did we allow
and the guy who plays the Hobbit is
Martin Freeman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Best known from The Office.
British Office. Love Actually. And also British Sherlock.
Oh, yeah.
I say British Sherlock. I say that now because it's an American version of the show.
Right.
The original Sherlock.
Anyway, so I was really excited about The Lord of the Rings when it first came out.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me preface this before I give the mic back to you. I'm not a fan of this sort of thing anyway. It's like teen fiction to me. And I know I don't mean to insult J.R. Tolkien. Whatever, I get all these guys confused.
Confusing him with J.J. Abrams.
Yes, I don't mean the books are teen fiction. What I mean is the genre is like teen fiction in that it has a built-in audience. They want to see it, but to me, they do not attract a wider audience. Again, I don't as a non-Harry Potter fan, I've never seen a Harry Potter trailer and go, you know, actually, I might watch that one. That looks like that could be quite interesting. In my mind, I've already blocked it off as that's for those people to dress up like wizards. Hobbit, Lord of the Rings, that's for people who are into all that.
Well, I mean, put it a less insulting level.
It's, no, we're not being insulting. I'm saying that's the thing. Good on them.
You know, give me a hard time, but
if I'd said that is for little people, then I'm being insulted.
It's mostly for people who already know the story. Like, yeah. And it's the excitement
mouth
about
breathers.
It, particularly the first... Now, listen, the books are... Have you ever read the books?
No.
Well, so see, this is the problem.
Oh, yeah.
You can't judge the books if you haven't read them.
No, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm saying they're not my cup of tea.
But, yeah. I'm just thinking about the various mouth breather things that you are fans of and how you draw the line between them. I think I've heard you say, you know, sci-fi good, dragons bad, you know, kind of thing.
Well, no, it depends in the context. A good dragon movie, I'm heavily into that.
What's a good dragon movie?
We'll come back to that a bit later. There's the one with Sean Connery and Dennis Quaid. That's a good one. Quaid is like a knight. And Sean Connery is the voice of the dragon.
Do you like the one with Christian Bale and Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah, that's quite a good one.
That's kind of different. That's more like a sci-fi.
But that's more like a sci-fi.
Yeah.
These are like all-out fantasy. Yeah. Whereas a solid dragon and not King Arthur type thing, even though you can make an argument that dragons are not real, it does seem within the realm of possibility to me. But in these Hobbit movies where all kinds of trees are coming alive and all kinds of stuff, I'm like, no, you're out there.
So anyway, I'm starting to say that, you know, putting your comment about it before the built-in audience is because people are interested in it because they want to see how the things that they read or they know about, even if they haven't read every word of it, the stories they know about are brought to life.
Okay.
And that's why the originals, I think, did really well because it was pretty interesting. I mean, there was new types of filming. We're now four movies into this thing. First of all, they're going back to The Hobbit, which is a simpler story than The Lord of the Rings was a much more elaborate story. The Hobbit was simpler. It was one book. Then now they've now turned into two movies. As we know from one of our friends, he was explaining how they brought parts of the Silmarillion in because that's like another story.
Yeah,
one
he's never,
that. That he was all
he could have been speaking Portuguese. So I had no idea what he was talking about.
It's just overkill now at this point. Yeah. And now when I see it, I look at this preview and I go, it's the same stuff. You know, people are doing this stuff. It was interesting when you brought this to life the first time and it was a movie the likes of which we had physically not seen before.
There's some truth in that, yes.
It's not new anymore.
So you have a problem with all these digital effects then?
It's not the effects. It's just that it's whatever. Although we're going to talk about digital effects on.
No, we're not going to have that conversation.
Well, but
again,
this movie is all digital effects.
Yeah.
I don't care that it's digital effects. It's just what I hate is that it's...
It's the same story, isn't it?
When it's shot like it's designed to be a video game, like there's one shot there we saw where all these things are running through. It's like a first-person shooter. You know, it's not like an actual movie.
I read something. What was I? I was watching something this week. There's this great Turner Classic Movies, and I don't know if they get them in the rest of the world. Turner Classic Movies is a cable station here, and they're currently doing like a 12-part documentary called The Story of Film, An Odyssey, made by an Irish documentary guy. If wherever you live in the world, look this up on IMDb and try and catch it. It's great. It's basically the history of cinema. Anyway, he got to the 90s and the 2000s, and he was talking about the rise of the digital effect. But then he was also talking about how, because of video games, more films were actually, you know, now it doesn't seem like this is not a big point to make. Films were shot that way for whatever reason. And in fact, the one of the first films to do it apparently was the Tomb Raider film because it was directly based on a video game.
Yeah, right.
But he also
made sense there.
But he also made the point that people were shooting them a certain way in order to perhaps look for the video game tie-in.
Right.
And ultimately with The Hobbit, I would actually think that's the case because it's based on a classic piece of literature.
Right.
Yeah, there is. I don't know.
I just like to see it's shot more recent. Well, I don't want to get into it too much because it's.
I will say this about Hobbit. I'm now going to compare Hobbit and Wolf of Wall Street. Wolf of Wall Street, 179 minutes. Because it's Martin Scorsese, I think I'll be able. He will keep my mind engaged so that I have a subconscious bladder control. That Hobbit movie, those other Lord of the Rings movies are like 3 hours each. If someone tells me the Hobbit movie is like an hour and a half, I'm going to just laugh in your face. That's probably about 3 hours too.
Yeah,
I'm going to tell you right now, there's nothing about that film that could subconsciously help me control my bladder.
No.
I could not sit through the Hobbit movie.
All that running water we just saw would be a problem.
Well, that would be a problem too, so, yeah.
Next movie, 47 Ronin with Keanu Reeves.
Although I don't need to feel the need to go to the toilet when I see like water and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't have that effect on me.
What I like about this preview is Keanu Reeves never says a word in the entire thing. I don't think. It's a lot of shots of him looking. He's getting hit by sticks now. His girlfriend's crying. He's being dragged out of a hole.
Keanu Reeves doesn't say a lot in many movies
exactly.
Anyway.
And this is where the preview goes wrong for me. Because...
Why did you come for me?
Oh, wait, he does say words. Never mind, that was him.
Those who enslaved you have taken over our land.
Mountains of corpses.
All right.
Will not stand
47 Ronin. Go.
So 47 Ronin is an actual thing. There were the 47 Ronin in the early 1700s. Obviously, it's old enough that it's become a bit, you know, mythologized, but it's an actual story about a set of samurai, Ronin, another word for the samurai, or something like that.
When they have no master and they kill themselves, they are committing seppuku.
Is that different than harikari?
No, it's just, but that's the technical term
for
harikari.
Yeah.
Seppuku.
So
I learned that
the story
from the film Ronin with Robert De Niro.
Their leader lord is killed and they're this small band. I think they were once upon a time 300. They're down to 47, blah, blah, blah. The story itself, however, is not that story. It's a fantastical story based, you know, using them as
this
a launch.
Ronin
point.
Meets Hobbit.
It's all this. And that's the point when I said the preview went wrong is up to that point, it was just people doing things to people and battling. And it looked like, you know, a regular war movie or, you know, samurai war movie.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there is this big ogre who's swinging around a mace and he's like, you know, computerized, all that sort of stuff. I was kind of interested in it before that happened. But once you put magic into it, I'm not into it.
I think it is, unfortunately, a desperate attempt. Let's face it. There's not a lot of Ronin movies. And I don't... Remember that film come out a couple of years ago, Cowboys versus Aliens, which I think is either based on a ride or a comic book or something. You know, we've gone round and around with genres, and some genres have kind of disappeared. So you bring them alive by just bunging a hot genre in there. And aliens and fantasy are both always hot in our current time. So, yeah, let's make a Ronin movie. But if you can throw some dragons in there, then the same crowd that couldn't get into The Hobbit or that bunch of mouth breathers are probably going to go and watch the Ronin movie.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to do fine, but I'm not as interested as I would have been if an actual story.
I am interested. I'm not interested in seeing the film, but I am interested in seeing how it's reviewed because that's directed by Keanu Reeves.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how he does. And, you know, Keanu Reeves is one of those guys, it's easy to make jokes about him. And his movies and his delivery and that kind of stuff. He's a smart guy. He's a savvy guy. And I'm curious to see how this film does. I kind of hope it's well reviewed. Because I'd like to... I think... I don't know. Keanu Reeves has always struck me as... He's always one of those people I'm like, yeah, the career should be more than it should have been.
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, you've never really seen him be a great actor that I know of. But he's...
No, but there is... I don't know. There's something... I'm interested to see what he does at the helm of a film. He is someone who's kind of our age, and I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, no, sure. Nobody's opposed to the guy, you know. All right, next movie is Monuments Men, so we get back to our George Clooney stuff.
It'll be paid.
In this one, it's lots of... This is more George Clooney audio than we had in all of our George Clooney episode, I think.
It's a Michelangelo joke to be made.
You're just the man to make it.
We have been tasked to find and protect art that the Nazis have stolen.
Well, the chaps are all very anxious to get started.
Here's where it gets interesting. Bill Murray.
Chicago,
yeah, Bill Murray in an ensemble with real actors.
School of Fine Arts and a few other experts in various
those,
fields of art.
Are the fellas making out?
Wes Anderson movies. They're ensembles with real actors.
Yeah, but he plays the comedic character in the
war zone and tell our boys what they can and cannot.
Did I say John Goodman already?
That's the idea.
if you would just read the orders.
And, Hugh Bonneville for people back in England.
Do not interrupt me, Lieutenant.
I think that
was the short guy who played the Bob Balaban. He was the one who was after Elaine in Seinfeld.
Bob Balaban, who's always in Cate Blanchett. So there you go. Monument.
So another real story, and I don't think this one is over. I'm sure it's somewhat fictionalized, but I don't think they're playing up it being sort of inspired.
That's based on
by
a book. No, it's based on a book, so which is a story. Book is a nonfiction account.
People saving the art, you know, a military group that was supposed to save the art that the Nazis were looting and
that's
maybe
right,
going to destroy. So
like a real life but less exciting Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones. Because he does the same thing.
The movie in theory should be good. The most interesting bit about this one, though, is that it was originally slated for release on December 8th.
Yeah.
And then it got postponed to February. I don't think it comes out until February. So technically, this isn't really even a holiday movie, other than that it was originally going to be a holiday movie.
I based this on nothing more. There were some interesting things about it. And again, I see stuff on the internet, and you can't believe everything you read on the internet. Up until the day this was to start shooting, it was listed on the IMDb. Daniel Craig was listed as being the star. And a couple of other websites, either regurgitating what they read in one place or with their own reporting, had Daniel Craig signed. He was one of the first names to be attached to George Clooney's Monuments Men. Then at the last moment, he was gone and Matt Damon was in. And it was about, I think what happened was Craig is currently on stage on Broadway and he just couldn't make it work. And he's on Broadway.
Do you know what he was supposed to play? Was he supposed to play George Clooney's role or something else?
He was supposed to play a character in this film. Now, no one's actually confirmed anything. No one's actually said, oh, we're sorry, Daniel can't be in it. But what I'm saying is this is also a film. The release date has moved around a couple of times. I heard that Clooney needed more time to edit it. I've also read on the internet that they're not quite... The studio is slightly nervous. Is it a war film? With Bill Murray and John Goodman and some of those guys, is it a comedy? Is it a black comedy? If it's an action film, well, other than sort of Matt and George, is it an action film with Bill Murray and John Goodman? I think there's some nervousness on the studio's part about what it is. And ultimately, as much as we all sit there and we want films to be what we want them to be, they are product for cinema and even for major studios. And I think even a George Clooney film is not enough to go, oh, yeah, George, yeah, whenever you need it. I have read some stuff online that there is some, not qualms, but just some studio indecision. And it is fascinating that a big budget movie with that kind of cast, the release date is now February.
Right, right.
I find that interesting.
It's interesting you mention that because I had not read anything online. Yeah. But when the previews, when the first came out like late summer, they had some previews at the movie theater, I think, or some ads I'd seen it. These were decidedly comedic.
That's what
previews.
I thought too. That's what
and,
I thought
and
too.
And like, so they have a scene where Bill Murray or somebody stepped on a mine, and if he steps off, it's going to blow up.
Yeah.
And John Goodman comes up. Why did you do that? You know, like it's all very comedic. You heard that trailer. There wasn't a bit of comedy in that trailer.
No,
that
it's
was
a
all
serious
kind of thing. There was a brief shot that, of course, you couldn't tell on a podcast, but of Bill Murray trying to get over the wall.
Yeah.
In basic training, because obviously these people are not military people; they're all art. People,
curators,
the conservators, all this sort of stuff. So, I'm totally makes sense. I mean, that's what I definitely thought when they changed. I said somebody figured out that this movie isn't, or it's not selling well enough to people as what we're billing it as at the moment, and so we need to.
It's neither
change the gears.
It's neither
and maybe they recut the movie even for all.
It's
we know.
Neither Ocean's 11 nor is it. Dirty Dozen.
Yeah. At the same time, I'm optimistic. I mean, listen, it's a great cast. The story sounds interesting.
You know,
both sets of previews I liked.
You know,
we've been different movies.
We burnt a whole show on George Clooney, so all I'm going to say is I'm going to continue along the line of like Robert Redford's involvement in something. Is George Clooney really going to be involved in something that sucks? So, yeah, but it is. I do find that interesting, and it will be interesting to see what happens when the film's released and how it's received.
So let's talk about it.
So it's actually not out Christmas. Okay, is this our last one?
No, we got a couple more.
All right.
We're going to race through some of the last ones. This one, definitely not any debate about what it is.
Well,
did I press the button right? No,
yeah,
I didn't.
What's not is the trailer starting.
In the 70s, they were an elite unit with names like Brick, Champ, Brian, and Ron. They rose like the phoenix, and then they were gone. Their legend became but a whisper. told by the trees. Until now.
We're starting a 24-hour news channel, and we want you.
I'm going to do the thing that God put Ron Burgundy on this earth to do. Have salon-quality hair and read the news.
This just feels right. The news team is bad.
So this preview's not very
welcome
good, but
to
it's...
Hades, baby.
Anchorman 2.
Foot between my legs?
No.
Oh. Who's my hand?
Your hair looks like wet popcorn.
I like the parts of your
now
face
adding Kristen Wiig
with skin.
Yeah. All right, so Anchorman 2. I know you're a big fan of Anchorman.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Look at him.
I like Lamp.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Exactly. But the people who are in the know will know what I said there.
Oh, do you want to go ahead and talk about Anchorman 2?
Yeah. I mean, listen,
I only have one thing to say about it.
It could be great. It could be horrible. Initially, some of these previews that came out made me think there's a good chance this could be horrible. It's getting seriously heavily exposed, and that's the problem.
Which does lead you to suspect it could be horrible.
It makes him nervous about it, right? So Ron Burgundy, like, he's doing ads for Dodge, like a whole series of ads for Dodge. He appeared
on some local news show as Ron Burgundy.
He interviewed Peyton Manning as Ron Burgundy. He appeared on the Dan Patrick Show, more sports stuff as Ron Burgundy. Which actually, there was I read an article all about that marketing and how they're thinking that that might be something they can use for other movies. And somebody asked him about it, asked Will Smith recently about it. He's like, it has to be a character that you could, like, there's not a lot of movie characters that you can pretend to be and go on to shows.
Yeah, that's right. No one's going to be a newscaster. And this week, and let's go down to the field where Superman is interviewing Peyton Manning.
Right. So, but the recent previews have actually seemed pretty darn funny.
Okay.
Now I'm just worried I'm going to know all the jokes by the time I get in there, but I do think it's actually going to be good. It's not going to be as cool as the original one was, very nonsensical. The thing is, it's still written by Will Smith. It's still written by Adam McKay. It's Will Smith.
Because his movie sucked.
Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, who wrote the original ones, who I think everything they write is basically funny. So I think it's going to be funny and hilarious.
I never saw the first Anchorman.
I know.
And I know that you
wanted... I offered you $5 to see it just this week, and you turned it down. That's after you said you didn't want to spend the $5. Offer you $5, you said no.
Here's my issue. I think it's easier for me to not see them, because if I now watch them now and I think it's hilarious, I'm only like 8 years behind the curve. And I'd rather, like, that's not my thing, rather than be so late. It's like someone turning you going, oh yeah, like Breaking Bad was great, and I'm like, yeah, I need to start watching that. I don't want to be, I haven't seen Anchorman, I'm not going to see Anchorman, because I just don't want to appear to be out of it. I'd rather make a conscious choice not to see it than to go, you haven't seen Anchorman? Oh, yeah, I just saw it last week. What, are you an idiot? Oh.
So, in other words, you're not watching it for spite. I might enjoy it, but I don't want to be,
I do want to say this, too, though. I do like the majority of the films that those guys are in, but there are a couple that they're in that are dogs, and I worry a little bit that anything, too, could be a dog. Especially, and historically... Comedy sequels are never as good and never as satisfying as original comedy.
No, I don't think it's going to be as cool.
I think
it's going to be funny.
Action sequels, you get away with it, because at the end of the day, it's just another action movie. Action sequels tend to have a higher, not standard, but they have a lower threshold for what your watcher is. Too often I've seen a sequel comedy and gone, yeah, it wasn't as funny as the first one.
No, it's comedy.
And history is
comedy's better fresh.
Yes, history is littered with comedy sequels that suck.
All right, let's quickly watch a preview that we can talk all over, because we're going to hate it anyway.
Oh, yeah. Although I'm surprised this film you're going to hate.
Oh, yeah.
This definitely seems right up your alley, and I'm going to say why.
First of all, I don't like the star. Second of all, I don't like the plot. There's a lot of junk here. So what this is, we'll give you an advanced thing. It's Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Hi,
with Ben
how can
Stiller.
I help you today?
Hi, I can't seem to leave a wink for someone.
Okay, I'm looking at your profile. You left a lot of this stuff blank.
Okay, well, I haven't really been anywhere.
I don't know.
Noteworthy or mentionable.
Have you done anything?
You know who that is? That's the younger guy from Hot Tub, Time Machine, and some of those other movies. He's kind of doughy looking dude. He was on The Office, The American Office, in the last couple of seasons.
Or The Intern.
Yeah.
She's gonna blow!
Go! You're noteworthy?
All right.
So the preview just shows him clearly having some daydreams, and which is the book by Thurber, the Secret Life.
Is he a daydreamer or a loser?
Well, he's a loser who has daydreams.
Okay, but he's a daydream. I mean, okay, I'm trying to get it straight because there's also
the movie is different. The movie, he has those daydreams, but then he does go on an adventure.
That doesn't happen
world.
In the book.
No.
Okay.
He just has
just
these daydreams. It's just a book. I'm not even sure it's a book. I think it's a short story.
Okay.
Which is half the reason I already hate it, because it'd be one thing to tell an interesting tragic story about a daydreamer type of thing, but then he goes around the world adventure to find a picture for Life magazine. It's just so cliched, like, we're going to do shots of this person, and they're going to come to terms with their greatness and all this sort of stuff and emerge from their shadows. So,
if you want to see a film about losers kind of daydreaming and how it sort of affects the real life, there is a great British black and white film from the 60s that often turns up on classic movie cable channels in both countries called Billy Liar, with an old actor called Tom Courtney and a very young Julie Christie. I'm just going to throw it out there as a movie tip of the week. Billy Liar, and it's based on this guy, and I don't want to give it away, but he's always daydreaming about what a brilliant life he would have. Anyway, it does sound like a similar sort of principle. Here's why I thought you would like this movie. This looks to me like another effort. I think every couple of Christmases, a studio sits there and goes, let's put out not a Christmas movie, but a movie about hope and people and blah, 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 blah. And it's like someone in the studio is sitting around going, where's this year's It's a Wonderful Life? Where's this year's It's a Wonderful Life? I feel like as soon as I saw the trailer, and because I don't know the story, I'm thinking, yeah, this looks like a modern attempt to sort of corner that, you know, sort of an offshoot of that Love Actually market, where it's like, oh, yeah. But it's not a Christmas movie.
Do you know me to be a big fan of Love Actually? Is that a big...
No, but you're a big fan of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah, but that's because it's a classic story.
But what I'm
this
saying is...
totally insincere. And
I understand that, but it is attempting to manipulate those sort of emotions.
I think when the people did It's a Wonderful Life...
No, I'm not comparing it to It's a Wonderful Life. But what I'm saying is the reason why It's a Wonderful Life is a classic is because it encapsulates... And it has that kind of emotive effect on you, and I don't know because I've never seen it. I'm assuming from listening to you talk, then I don't need any other knockoff to that. We've got it. If I want to have that feeling at this time of year, I can just watch It's a Wonderful Life. Why am I dropping £15, $15, whatever it is, wherever you live, to go and watch Ben Stiller, where the ultimate effect is you're supposed to leave the cinema. You know, there's him, he's kind of a loser, there's a girl. It's a hope, all this kind of stuff. Yeah. Been there, done that.
Yeah, I don't really do. I just, while you were discussing that, I'm thinking about the differences between It's a Wonderful Life and movies I do like. I do like movies about people finding their way and all these great sort of triumphs and things like that. But
you like It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But here's...
I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying I've not seen it. that's not a criticism.
But this might be the most... serious principled thing I'm going to say about my perspective on movies and what makes a better movie.
Do it.
And I'm sure it's personal taste, but...
Do it.
Is that I like a movie where somebody triumphs over their adversity and finds their purpose or salvation or whatever it is they find, you know, on the other side of this adversity within the confines of their actual life, like the reality of it or whatever they're doing, their like a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
He pines for the outside world or the great adventures he could have never had and realizes there's so many great things right in front of you.
Yeah.
I love the stories. Those are great stories. And I think those are realistic stories that a person who was reading a story can feel good about because they can look at that and say, oh, I have aspects of that or I could have aspects of that. This one, where he finds ultimately his salvation, and this is what makes me bother, is that they changed the story even to do this. He's going to find it by becoming a world traveler and save the world or whatever
exactly
the heck he's
going
to do.
It.
It's just worldly and like, sure. Yes, we'd all be
it's
wonderfully
nice. Yeah,
fulfilled
we'd all be wonderful if we could
go everywhere.
Exactly, yeah.
So I'd much rather hear a real story
because
about somebody to triumph.
Because
it's
a wonderful life. His triumph is everyday triumph
exactly.
of coming to see how great his life is. You're right. This guy needs to go and do all these other things to give his life meaning.
Yeah.
Well, you know something? Then that means at the end of the day, you're still a loser.
Exactly.
And then that's. Is there anything else?
There was one last movie, and this one's pretty...
I don't know anything about this, so I'm going to let you talk about it.
Yeah, so this movie's called Her. It's with Joaquin Phoenix. It just recently started getting some discussions about it. Whoops, I'm still in the commercial, so I need to...
That would be Joaquin Phoenix. I must say, since Joaquin Phoenix made his announcement that he wasn't going to do any more acting gigs, he's been in a lot of good movies.
Well, yeah.
He did that whole stunt
with everything. So, the story, I'll just sort of
Mr. Theodore Twombly, Welcome to the world's first artificially intelligent operating system. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, got lots of things on.
Are you social?
The one with John Cusack being John Malkovich.
Being John Malkovich adaptation.
Yeah.
How would you describe your relationship with your mother?
Music video Sabotage.
Thank you.
By the Beastie Boys.
Please wait as your operating system is initiated.
And did a play on a 70s cop show.
Hello, I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Spike Jones, yeah. Work with a voice.
Hi.
So,
I'm Samantha.
Did you recognize the voice of the operating?
Good
so
morning.
I didn't recognize it, but I know who it is.
Scarlett Johansson is the voice, and he basically falls in love with
his phone.
Okay,
yeah, look, this artificial intelligence thing. So it's, they're billing it as a sci-fi romance.
Okay.
I love the way you look.
Good luck with that. Yeah, listen, it's not going to do big money. I'm interested to see what it does.
Are you ready to date?
What do you mean?
I'm assuming it's a vibrating. This is what I think weird is coming up here in a second.
So what was it like being married?
You do know our listeners can't see this.
I feel so good.
No, I'm sorry, but I'm going to tell them what we're going to see.
How do you share your life with somebody? How are you?
Amy Adams.
Having fun.
Is Amy Adams just in every single movie now? I mean, I really like her as an actress, but she's everywhere.
She's in every movie that Kirsten Wiig is not.
Right.
There are, in the same way there's only three stories in Hollywood, there are now only two actresses, Kirsten Wiig and Amy Adams.
So this notion is he falls in love. In fact, all the way the descriptions is they fall in love, meaning his operating system and him. It's an artificial intelligence.
This does not sound like my cup of tea.
I'm sure it's not.
The words sci-fi romance did me in. I'll do romance. I'll do sci-fi.
Here's what I think is the most interesting romance. If we ultimately emerge to something, some level of artificial intelligence on computers and things like this, this will actually happen. I mean, listen, people will fall in love with fake profiles on Facebook.
But you know something? That's like, people have been doing that for years.
Right.
Celebrity people, that's basically where you get stalkers from.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is,
because I believe that Amy Adams is the one for me.
In the world of sci-fi movies,
I am now obsessed with Amy Adams.
This is one of the most plausible sci-fi plots I've seen ever. Because I think that's actually people happen. Listen, if you had robots walking around who acted like people would fall in love with those robots.
Yeah.
It's like we talked about, you know, at a much more small level is your feeling for the dog robot.
Yeah, yeah.
You have an emotional reaction. There's no way people will not have an emotional reaction.
Well, I think people have an emotional reaction like when I kick the dog robot.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
That was the thing.
So if there was a robot person and somebody shot it in the head, people would have an adverse reaction.
You know, I don't want to hammer it without seeing it. I actually think it's one of those films that if it's well reviewed, it's one of those you might go to and you hope hopefully it's done a sort of way where it makes you think. But if not, then you know something, I hate to say this. You know, romantic comedies all tend to end up kind of rolling the same way. They're all the same film. In the same way that superhero movies are all the same film. And, you know, just because it is the same story with a couple of different angles, is that going to make it a new, fresh motion picture experience? I don't know. I don't know enough about it, so I'm not going to slag it off because I've been one happy hammering a few other things.
94% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, yeah, but it's not out yet.
Yeah, but it is sort of because it's been previewed as an art movie
good.
And stuff like
Spike
that.
Spike Jonze definitely does some things. He also did did he do the movie version of Where the Wild Things Are? I think he did.
Yes, he did.
Spike Jonze, you know, he brings some creative ideas to the table. I think, you know, I actually think Joaquin Phoenix is, I think he's a talented guy. I think he's a good, proper actor.
Yeah.
You know, he's not just like a movie star. He's got acting chops in the same way that I think DiCaprio is the same way. Put it this way, I'm more likely to see that than to go to The Secret Life of Walter Mitty and just sit there and sort of go, seriously, this was the film again?
No doubt.
Yeah.
So that's it for our movies.
Okay.
We had some votes up there. Hopefully some people see them. Maybe we'll... We were going to talk about our summer movies and who was right and wrong. We haven't gotten around
to that.
Yet.
We can do that at the next episode.
We can do all this sort of stuff.
We've got so much stuff on the table.
So the other topic we're going to talk about, I'm having a hard time reading our clock to figure out how long
we have gone. Do you want to shelve this until the next episode?
No, but how long are we here?
This second episode is an hour. The second part of our Christmas special is now an hour and 15 minutes.
That's, we only need five more minutes for the rest of this.
All right, listeners, you've been warned. I want it to stop now.
Well, if you want to, the only last part we're going to talk about is New Year's resolutions. Want to talk about that next episode?
I think we do a whole thing. Yeah, let's do a whole thing.
All right, next episode.
So we just want to wish everyone.
It's another chance. Yeah, that's true.
We'll do that. We'll
do that. But about the New Year's, we invited people to send us New Year's resolutions. I think maybe over the holiday season we can forcibly gather a New Year's resolution.
Why don't we do that? Yeah. I will attempt to do that.
And we'll talk all about those next
time. Although I know people will probably establish that as I don't do presents, they're going to sit there and go, well, he's not doing resolutions.
Yeah, resolution for Zeph is going to be to give presents.
I will forcibly get some New Year's resolutions. So we're basically, by the time you hear from us again, it'll be 2014, but another exciting year on the podcast. Hopefully, I know we've got some new listeners, and I just want to say
thank you.
Thank you to all of you. And
you're not getting a gift from Zeph, but thank you.
No, but you've given. But you know something? We are giving you a gift every week.
Oh, let's not get carried away.
The gift of us.
Right.
I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric.
Merry Christmas.
And take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. For more, you can follow us on Twitter at Atlantic_voice. You can email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. Or you can find this show and others on Libsyn.com or on iTunes. The Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.